The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
Okay, geography. Where is my neighbor? Are we able to teach geography to our students in a way that keeps them coming back for more, wondering what the teacher is going to have next? That would be nice. How do we make it personal also? I want to talk some about some impersonal things, but also the idea that wherever you study about in the world, there are people that live there. Actually, you might study about some places that are very barren, someplace in the mountains or a desert or something, and really there's a limited amount of things you can study about there. But you get into highly populated areas and things like that, and all of a sudden you find out there's all sorts of interesting things. And to get the children's interest, to attract it and to hold it there, you're going to have to focus on things that interest them. Now, probably the number one problem, though, is if I'm not interested in it, and I'm just teaching it because the school board said I have to. So I'm going to have to teach this class, and I think it's kind of boring and whatever. I found as I was preparing for this, and I'm interested in geography, that's great. I was interested in it, but as I prepared for this and started doing some checking, and I went online, and we may not all have those capabilities, but you can check in libraries and things. All of a sudden, I started finding interesting facts, and oh, this is really interesting. In fact, probably wasted some time just playing around looking at interesting facts. And we'll talk about some of those. In fact, I have some of those on the last page and a half. Okay, I drew some things here on the board. And I don't know, I'm not an artist, but can you identify this as a state? What about this one? I threw that one in for good measure. I don't think any of us live there or probably have lived there. And see, it's not drawn to scale either. Anyone want to guess what that one is? I couldn't have told you either. I just got it off the map over there. Now you're looking at the map to see if you can figure it out. This is Rhode Island. And this little spot in here, and I probably don't have the one side drawn quite right. This should have been more up in through here. Okay. And that's one of the things that I mentioned down in there farther, is at the beginning of the year there on D, under 3. It says, at the beginning of the year, have the students draw an outline map from memory, and at the end of the year, do it again and compare the maps. If they can get interested in seeing how maps function, and maps to me is a big part of helping the student understand geography. So you have to be interested in maps and figure out how maps work first and then get the children interested in that. One thing that a little story that I tell, I live in Ohio. I live at about right there, is where I about right in there. Okay, Columbus, Ohio is down here. My wife's family, and some of you perhaps, are from up in, anyway, Wisconsin, up in this area. We regularly go up to visit her parents and family once a year, maybe sometimes more. And one year, this has been my oldest daughter, she was probably in her teens, wanted to know if we could stop in at Columbus on our way up to Wisconsin. You know, we live here, Columbus is down here, Wisconsin's way up there. We head off across Indiana to go to Wisconsin. And I was shocked. But she didn't know any better. She hadn't worked that much with geography, didn't realize what all was involved in the United States and all, and it wasn't until later. She knows a lot more about it now than then. But all of a sudden, I became kind of concerned about my children knowing a little more about geography, especially as they got older. She was the oldest one, but as they got older, and those young people start driving out the lane without mom and dad, and you hope they come back. She spent some time at Faith Mission, And while there, we were out there or something, dropped off a younger sister, and she and the younger sister came back a day or so later. And they were coming down here across West Virginia to Charleston, where you get 35 and you go up to where we live. Well, she missed it. She calls me up. Dad, we missed our turnoff. I said, where are you? And Jared and I, by taking a map, were able to figure out where she was, find her a bridge to get across the Ohio River. And I said, you call me when you get back up in there, because I knew she's going to lose cell phone service down where she was at. It's kind of a scary thing for a dad. You're sitting in your living room, nice and safe, but you're not sure where your daughters are ending up at. All of a sudden, it became very important to me that they know how to read a map and work with that. She enjoys that much more now than she did. Now my middle daughter she doesn't even hardly like me to put a GPS in her car when she goes places. She wants to just do it with the map. She likes the map. She likes to work with the map. Okay, Psalms 24 says, the earth is the Lord's, the fullness thereof. Do we have that concept that this is God's world? The people in it are God's. He has created them. They that dwell therein, he hath founded upon the seas. There's so much in God's world, and can we communicate that to the students in our class? So I have to be interested. I have to know the subject. I need to read other sources for interesting ideas. And this is very important, that you don't just look at the curriculum if the curriculum you have is very interesting and you can make it interesting, fine. But I think you'll do yourself a favor if you find some extra facts on your own that they can't readily read in the text that they have, and bring that along to class with you. This is a book that Jonas has. Some of the time when Elmer Glick's on the workshop team, Jonas has his class instead of me. And this is one of the things he was going to use. And this has just two-page spreads of different countries. And it is specifically written from a Christian standpoint and how to pray for Christians in these countries. I don't know if I would use all of that. It might be helpful. You might be able to even use it for devotional or something like that. I've done some looking through it. Some of the stuff, it would look at things a little differently than we do as Anabaptists. So this is probably not a book that I would put out on the shelf and say, children, here's something very interesting for you to read. But I might take it along to class and read out of it different things that are interesting. Hey, Pedro, how much further do we have to climb to get to your house? John panted. I'm out of breath. Not much further, Pedro grinned. Only about an hour. Pedro is a, oh dear, Quechua boy whose family lives in a village in the Andes Mountains of Peru. Wrapped in warm ponchos, the two boys continued climbing along the steep path. As they walked, Pedro pointed out small terraced fields of maize, wheat, and potatoes, as well as sheep, alpacas, which are bred for their fine, soft fleece, llamas, and a condor. You might be surprised when you see my house, Pedro told his new friend. It only has one room with a dirt floor. We don't have electricity or running water either, but you'll be very welcome. My mother's a great cook. And it's got a fact file, tells some things about the population and that sort of thing, what languages are spoken there. There's a riddle, what bites you inside your stomach? Hunger. It has some Quechua, I'm not sure how to say that word, but it has some words in their language for you to waller around that. Even small children find that very interesting, because all of a sudden it became alive. We're talking about two boys here, and it seems real to them. Now, you could have done that population thing. You could have talked about this, and it's in Peru, and things like that. But it had been very boring. But suddenly it becomes alive, because now we're talking about things that they do. Because if you read more on this page, it'll tell you the way they eat, activities that they do. Here's another interesting thing. It says the Spanish brought their Catholic faith to Peru. Today, nearly 500 years later, most of the Quechua people belong to the Roman Catholic Church. But when they need help, they usually turn to priests who still follow their old Inca religion from back before they were discovered by the Europeans. So, and then it gives different things you can pray for them about. Now, depending on what school, what group you'd be part of and all, you might not want to use all that. And especially as I look through this, some of the pictures I would find a little bit questionable and all, but there again, it's a good resource book for the teacher, not one that you necessarily lay out and say, here, you guys can look through this. So a book like that, Wind on the World, and there's other things like that, those are things that you as a teacher can use as a starting point for a study on something like that. It gives it a very personable note, personable, that there are people living there. Too often children look at a geography lesson and it's just facts and dates and places and, you know, imports and exports and things like that, and they're not interested. But when it translates into people, families, and children like them, suddenly they're a lot more interested. Now, often children are interested in how big or small or, you know, things like that. So let's go back then to towards the bottom of your second page there. I've got some interesting facts that I picked up, and you can find more of those. I'm sorry. Alaska. More than half of the coastline of the entire United States is in Alaska. Now, you could use that fact if you were talking about coastlines, talking about the United States, talking about Alaska. You can use that as an interesting fact for different types of things there. It needs to be subject specific, though. Don't just throw it in. If you're talking about Ireland, that's probably not the right thing to say. So, as I studied that, I thought, well, I want to know how much coastline Alaska has. So I clicked on that and found out it has 6,000, I think it's 6,415. I didn't write it down, and that's what my memory says. That would mean to me that the United States total, the total United States coastline would be something over 12,000 miles. That would be the East Coast, the West Coast, Gulf of Mexico, and Hawaii. And yet Alaska still has more coastline. Now, when I prepare for one of these topics, I have to send it in to the people at CLP to see if it's okay if I tell you about it. And they look over my shoulder at my notes. John Swartz looked at it and sent me an email back with more facts. That's John Swartz, if you know him. He said Canada has, get this, 151,000 miles, is something over that, 151,000 miles of coastline. Now, you can't see that, but there is piles of lake and ocean and stuff like that up there, and that's what creates all the coastline that's up there. But the United States has a little over 12,000, and Alaska has 151,000. You know, if we're talking about coastlines and things like that, all of a sudden, you know, it boggles a child's mind, and they like to think about things like that. And all of a sudden it becomes more real to them. Here's a fact about Ohio, because that's where I live. There are no natural lakes in the state of Ohio. Everyone is man-made. Now, just south of us, less than a half an hour, I think, there's a Grand Lake St. Mary's. That's the biggest man-made lake, I think, in the eastern United States. I'm not quite sure about that, but it's very big. But it's not a natural one. There's no natural ones in the state of Ohio. And obviously, then you can explore ideas about what makes a lake and what makes a pond, and, you know, certainly there's some natural things there, but it has to be a certain size That brought to my memory the fact that I used to live in southern Ohio, down in here, and there's the longest creek in the world is there. It's called Raccoon Creek. And we wondered, why do they say it's the longest creek in the world? It's because that once a creek is so long, it's called a river. And Raccoon Creek is 1/10 of a mile short of being a river. So to live anywhere else in Ohio, that probably isn't going to catch you too much. But the children that live around there, they're kind of proud of that. Or, you know, they find that a very interesting fact because they know about Raccoon Creek. They may have went canoeing on it. It is basically a river. But to know that we have the longest one in the world or something like that, that's important to them. They enjoy something like that. So, there again, if you're studying local geography, find out really interesting facts about local stuff that you can incorporate into your teaching. Another fact there at the bottom of the page, Rome. The first city to reach a population of 1 million people was Rome, Italy, in 133 BC. And there is a city called Rome on every continent. There again, you wouldn't want to mix that fact up necessarily with the coastline thing. It just doesn't apply. It doesn't work together. They might find it interesting, but they're going to say, you know, what's the teacher trying to do? So try to make those interesting facts applicable to whatever the subject is you have. Going back to the first page, we discussed two. All right, there on three. Use maps. A map like this is very good. I was in a classroom the other day that had a map like this, and then another one the same size of the world. And those two, if I had to pick between the two, I'd rather have two maps like this for that rather than a globe. I think a globe is nice, and it helps in many ways, and it shows the more how things are curved, and it gives a more true picture. But a globe is so small. Now, if they would bring in a globe that was 5 feet in diameter, I'd get a little more excited about a globe that size. But I'm sure that wouldn't work well. And how would you get it in the door? Okay. Find the place being studied. And have the students find it. For me, to just always go up and say, oh, this is where I live in Ohio. You live up, or right now we're up in this area, that's not very interesting. But when the child has to find it, and they actually see it on the map, that's important. Now, that still may not catch their attention very much. Another thing is, do you have relatives living somewhere in the United States? This is where Uncle Abner's live. Or maybe if you have a world map, put tags on it as to places where there are missionaries that you know, things like that. There's a very good help if there is a missionary passing through and he will stop in at the school and talk about things in the place where he's a missionary at and his family. If his family's along, maybe they say some words in another language. They show some of the things that are worn there. All of a sudden, you know, the children's attention is really grabbed by that. And in my thinking on that, if you have an opportunity like that, grab it and stop working on the geography that you are working on or whatever. Take the opportunity right then, because you can't just say, well, I'm going to study that when I get to it. It's too bad there's a missionary here this week. No, the missionary came. You better drop what you're doing and switch to that at least for a couple special classes or something, just to get that into the children's mind. It so expands the child's thinking when suddenly they realize, you know, this family lives that far away, and you have to help them understand how distance works. That's difficult, especially to very young children. We have one of our teachers, she teaches third and fourth grade. I think it was last year, at the beginning of the year, She took a bulletin board, it'd probably been from here down to that end, took a projector and drew then on the bulletin board our community, the roads and all in our community. And most of those children had no idea where their friend lived, even though their friend lived down the road. It just didn't make sense to them. You know, so-and-so lives on Grub Road. Well, what's Grub Road to them? Or Kemp Road or Pequod Road or something. Those are some of the road names in our area. But she did that. Then she, this is the one thing I'm not sure about. It was either pictures of the children or pictures of the front of their house. Either one would work. And she put them at the right spots on those maps. And these children went over there. They would do it. It wasn't just a one-time thing. You know, you live there. I live here. We're not very far apart. And she lives way over there. Well, in our community, that's not really usually true because we live very, very close together in our community. There's a lot of people in a very close area. But it gave them a feel for their community. And they became very interested in that. And all of a sudden, they started paying attention to where Mom was driving. And, you know, Mom, if you would go down this road, you would go to Sunset's house. Where before that, they couldn't have told you. They might have been able to tell you how to get to Grandma's house or something like that. I don't know. But suddenly they became very interested just in our local geography. Talk about things that affect the climate there. And that was something that I found to be very interesting. I wish I had a world map here. We kind of have a feel, many of us, even children, of, you know, we know that up here in Wisconsin and Minnesota, you guys have some pretty cold winters. Ohio, we can have some cold in the winter. It's not real cold, but Florida, that's warm. And a lot of these southern states, it's very warm and all, but you have some pretty heavy winters out here and up in Canada. And then as they study and they read about a place like England and that it has a temperate climate that would probably be a lot like we have in Ohio. They would have some snow, but warm weather, and it's very humid there, probably more so than even Ohio. Now, the tendency then is to think that they're somewhere along the 40th parallel line of latitude. They'd be somewhere here. That's not true. England, if you followed it, would be somewhere up in here in Canada. Now, why is that? It's because there's a warm ocean current that's coming up from the Caribbean all the time, and it goes up there, and the breezes off of that warm water keep England very temperate. There's other places that are farther south than our area of the Midwest that are a lot colder in the world too. And some of that may be due to altitude. Again, it may be due to ocean currents. I was telling this at another workshop and somebody said, you know, if you go up here to the Alaska, you've got these Aleutian Islands. They said there's one of those islands that is subtropical because of an ocean current that goes through there. It never or rarely freezes at that one certain island. That becomes interesting then to a child to figure out how God made the world in such a way that there's warm spots where we would think they'd be cold, and there's colder spots where we think they'd be warm. Most children, when they think of Guatemala, they think of a hot place. Well, our youth group went down there to work at one of the missions that was high up in the mountains, and they found out that it was very cold. Could be not very cold, but cold enough, they were glad they brought along some jackets and stuff, especially in the morning. And another thing they found out, especially the boys who wanted to show how much work they could get accomplished, that they couldn't work very long. These boys were supposed to dig a ditch, getting ready to lay a concrete block retaining wall, I think. They grabbed the picks and shovels, and they were going to tear into it, and they figured they'd be done in an hour. And about 5 minutes later, those guys are all standing around panting. And it's because of the high altitude and the thin air. And I mean, my son just said, Dad, you just thought you should be able to go on, and you just couldn't, and you just ran out of oxygen. Now, by the time they left there, they were getting more used to it and were able to, but they started pacing themselves and putting less effort into the work and trying to make things count. So, you know, those are all interesting facts that all of a sudden help children to understand that, you know, these people live in a much different place than we do. And to respect other people's area in the world. Altitude, ocean currents, mountain ranges. It was only a few years ago that I realized that there's basically a desert over here on eastern Oregon. I thought all Oregon was like where my friends live in Estacada, and that it rains every other day or every day, as the case may be, and that it's a moist, temperate place. Well, you go to eastern Oregon, and it's there's actually some places that qualify as desert, the way I understand. Another thing you can do, we talked about mapping your local community, but make map puzzles of the different states. If you, again, are able to use an overhead projector and throw it on a big piece of paper and cut it apart, and then the children can put them back together, it's going to get raggedy, and you may have to make different ones of them. Even if you would just take a state, you take Minnesota, and do that, and then cut it apart in a certain way so that they can spend time in their free time, or even in class, figuring out a map puzzle. If they draw an outline map from memory, I would, you know, let students say, okay, look at the state of Minnesota for 5 minutes, then shut your book and you try to draw it from memory. Now we're going to study this for the next 3 weeks or something like that, and at the end of that time, well, you would take this first paper, put it in a file, and at the end of that time, tell them we're going to do it again. Now we're going to compare the two. Some students probably aren't going to do a lot better. Other students, you'll see a very, very marked improvement in what they can do there. Any thoughts, questions, ideas of yours at this point? Make a local guidebook. And I got this idea from hearing about a homeschool mom that did this. She told her children to think about their home community and what they think other children would be interested in doing in their community. And they made a guidebook. And I think she even got them printed some way and put into some local businesses that was interesting for the children. You may not be able to do all that, but probably the big block there is where the teacher says, well, what is interesting in our community? I don't think our community is very interesting. And I thought about our community, and we're not very far from Grand Lake St. Mary's. That might be something that would be interesting. There's a Pioneer Village that's north of us. You know, I would probably broaden it outside of our county to maybe 5 or 6 counties around us so that you can find some interesting things there. But what are the things that you can find that are interesting there? If the children are busy doing that, they can find all sorts of interesting facts on their own. The things that interest them, and that can give you an insight into what the children like to study. Now, we shouldn't just cater to the children and say, okay, we're only going to study the things you like. That's not the idea either. But it does give you ideas for bringing in interesting facts to make the things they do need to learn interesting. So just some other ideas there. Let's go back to our fact page. Go back to the third page and look at that a little more. I would probably use these next two in thinking about forests. Land. Siberia contains more than 25% of the world's forests. And Siberia is at the top of the continent of Asia. And you have to explain to them that it is very cold there. Because as you look at the next one, where it says the Amazon rainforest produces more than 20% of the world's oxygen supply, then there's going to be children that are smart enough, they'll say, what is the Amazon rainforest then almost as big as Siberia? No, it's not anywhere close. But I think that the difference there is that the Amazon is down in the tropics and produces a lot more oxygen per tree because they grow a lot more than the ones in Siberia where it's very cold and the trees grow very slowly. So that gives some children the ideas about what's happening with that. You can also talk about the way man has destroyed parts of God's creation and the way that they tear down forests and all and don't replant. More and more the Amazon forest is disappearing, and it's due to man's poor economics with God's green earth. I think we can go overboard being green, but I think children should have an awareness of using God's world in a proper method also, and that can be brought into a geography lesson. What's the actual smallest sovereign entity in the world? I asked some of my former students and smart friends, and they immediately said, the Vatican. I said, nope. That's the next smallest. This sovereign military order of Malta has an area of 2 tennis courts. It's the smallest sovereign entity. There's 80 people living there in 2001. The Vatican is nearby, and there's about 100 people living at the Vatican, and I don't know how big the Vatican is, but it's not a lot bigger than that. It's very similar. Might be a little bit bigger than that. Let's go on down to roads. Got gravel roads around here. I know you do in Wisconsin. The county I live in Ohio, doesn't have any gravel roads that I know of. And there's probably other counties in Ohio that would not. Chances that a road is unpaved in the USA is only 1%. I found that very hard to believe. I wasn't sure I quite believed that. I take it as truth, but and I'd like to know a little more how they decided that, how they came to that conclusion. But in Canada, there's a 75% chance that when you drive on a road, you're going to be on a gravel road. And I can believe that. Pete and I have spent a lot of time in Alberta. And there's just so many gravel. I mean, the main roads are paved, but you don't go very far off the main road and suddenly you're on all gravel roads. We visit a place that's far north in Alberta called Lacrete. And for a long time he said that there's only 2 roads going into it and both roads were gravel. Now the one that, ever since I visited there, the one road's been paved. But the other road, they're still working on it. They hope to get that paved also. Just looking at that from a U.S.-Canada standpoint, but then in that, you know, some of the lessons that I'd be bringing in there to the class would also be consider the population of Canada compared to the population of the United States, and it's quite a bit different, I think. I think there's a city in the United States that has more people in it than all of Canada put together. Okay. In the United States, there's an interstate system that goes all back and forth over our country, and we love to drive on it because it's so easy to get someplace and we don't have to slow down for stop signs and all. Do you know what the interstate system was put in for? It was put in after World War II with the idea of moving army vehicles in a hurry if war ever came to the United States. And supposedly, the straight sections are there's supposed to be 1 mile that's straight in every 5 so that they can land airplanes on it. That was a new one for me. Some people say it's a legend, urban legend, but that's what I've heard anyhow. Let's look back then. We'll leave that last fact for at the end. Yep. 5 themes to help you stay focused. Think about the location. It can be longitude and latitude, and that can be kind of boring. Children, 40 degrees latitude, such and such longitude. That's boring to them. Now, I was visiting a school. I was trying to think exactly where. Indiana. I was in Indiana, and visiting a school, and the teacher was doing this. And he had mislaid his paper as to where they were exactly. But I went out to my car and got on the GPS, and if you know how to mess with the GPS a little bit, you can find out the exact spot that you're at on the map. Now, all of a sudden, and when I came back in and gave that, the children all perked up, and they were going to write that down and tell their mom and dad when they got home and things like that, because they knew the exact spot. He was close, but he had just a general idea. And I had all, you know, right down to the point something, longitude and latitude. So to them, that became a lot more interesting because they knew the exact spot where my car was sitting out in the parking lot. They should also know directions as far as, you know, north, south, east, west. And sometimes we maybe take them on a field trip, you know, like a hike or something like that, and talk about that then. You know, what direction are we going now? How do you know you're going that direction? Can you tell it from the sun? Can you tell it from, is there other things that you can tell it from? How could you tell where you're going by at night and things like that? And as you relate it to things in their actual world, it becomes more interesting. Place. What makes a place different from other places? And how does that affect the way the people live there? You know, try to get the people of the place that you're studying involved in your teaching, because as you do that, it becomes alive to the children. What are the relationships among people and places? Children in our country may be fearful about this or that, but they have nothing. They know nothing about fear. You can find some stories in that book about places where the children come home and their parents have died that day because their house was ransacked or raided or a bomb hit their house or something like that, and they live in fear. We don't live in fear like that here in the United States, and we're thankful for that at this point. But what is the human environment interaction between people? Movement. What are the patterns of movement of people, products, and information? How do they get things around in that country? Again, if you can get people that have been there to talk to your children, that really helps. My daughter and her husband spent some time over in Bangladesh teaching English a couple years ago, and she had pictures and things like that. That gets to be really interesting as to the way they get around there, the rickshaws and all that sort of thing. So, and because it's so different. And another one was that my daughter sent pictures back of a brickyard. They were making bricks where they pour the mud into forms and pack it in with their feet, and they bring the clay in baskets on their head and stuff like that. No dump trucks, no skid steers. You know, all of a sudden the children, whew. But, you know, my daughter mentioned in her email that time, she said, when we come to watch, they would go to watch, they were building a dike to hold back seawater, I guess, that come up this one river. They said the guys put bigger and bigger loads on their head, just, you know. They show off there just like they do everywhere else in the world, I guess. Regions. How can the earth be divided into regions for study? By language, political divisions, religions. Just try to make it personal, something that they can relate to in their life. Let's look at that last fact there on the last page. This is one that I found very interesting, and I can even find it on here. What's the biggest island, the biggest freshwater island in the world? And that's right here in Lake Huron. It's Manitoulin Island. I guess I'm saying that right. Now remember, it's a freshwater island, so you can't count any of the islands that are out in the oceans. But that island is big enough that it has a lake of its own, and one or several lakes of its own, and one of those lakes has an island. So you have an island with a lake with an island. And, you know, there again, it's just something to pick up their interest, get them interested in studying. If you're studying Lake Huron, that's an integral part of that lake and the formation of how that lake is formed and the way it looks. So, hope you can work well with your students and teaching them geography and helping them to understand a little more about God's world and having compassion and love for other kinds of people, other races, other people that are much less fortunate than we are, and seeing how other people live.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.